Blog Talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first edition of Pancakes and Power Slams hosted by Crave Wrestling. I am your host, Chris Featherstone, with my co-host, Ryan Fuqua. And
we are just ready to go.
We are going to first start off without further ado because there's a lot to cover. All of the callers, be sure to call in 347-884-8452. Once again, that number is 347-884-8452. You'll be able to also participate in live chat. Just got a lot to cover today, so looking forward to it here. I'll be able to read some chat quotes and things like that, so be sure to comment and put your, I'm sure, your very fervent comments on the chat as well. So let's start off with WrestleMania recap. We first start off with the pre-show streamer on WWE.com, which was the tag team title match between the champions, Epico and Primo, going against the three-day tag team of Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd, both former World Heavyweight Champions, with different partners. Somehow the WWE thought that they were going to have a good showing, which they did, which that didn't surprise me, against the Usos, who inducted, along with Rikishi, Yokozuna, into the Hall of Fame on Saturday. So as we were watching that, I'm sure that a lot of people were wanting to for the Epico and Primo to drop the titles. I personally think that it would have been a very, very good send-off to Yokozuna if the Usos would have had the win, the victory, and would have claimed the tag team champions. So that's my personal opinion. I think it would have been good. Epico and Primo hasn't done, haven't done really much with the titles in the first place to make them relevant as the former champions were. So, Ryan, what are your thoughts on this match here?
As you know, I like Epico and Primo. Classic tag team. Not too many of those around anymore in WWE, it seems like. But also, I do like the Usos more. I agree with you with the Yokozuna send-off. Would have been nice, and, you know, have Rikishi come on out and have them win. Would have been good. But also the team of Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel, I know it was impromptu, but I feel like if they keep with it, it may be able to work. Two guys that are extremely great, good wrestlers, should I say, so. But I would have liked to see the Usos win the titles at the, in that match.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I I guess it was kind of like a trial and error for Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd. And from what I saw, they, you know, they delivered. Of course, I was expecting that, and they didn't disappoint me with their wrestling. So I guess we will see what will happen with Epico and Primo if they will actually have a relevant feud. Maybe this will launch into a feud between Kidd and Gabriel. So we'll see. I think SmackDown is the perfect haven for a type of angle like that, because SmackDown is a little lackluster when it comes to relevant builds. We had one relevant build on SmackDown between Sheamus and Daniel Bryan, but it lasts all of 18 seconds. So, so we will. Speaking of that, Perfect segue to the first match of WrestleMania 28. We saw the glitz, we saw the glamour, and then we saw some gloom. The gloom was Daniel Bryan coming out and kissing AJ and turning around to a big present called a broke kick. And the 18 seconds, which still didn't make a record, it was second place as far as a world championship, because they still consider the ECW championship as a world championship. So, and that was 3 seconds with Kane and Chavo at, I believe, 24. So this basically just this really hurt a good build. You had Daniel Bryan, who won cashed in the Money in the Bank in December, I believe it was, against Big Show, and he defied all odds, and he beats Show and Henry in a cage match at the Royal Rumble. He wins the Elimination Chamber, beats 5 more people, all to just hand Sheamus the World Heavyweight title. So I personally believe that this was awful. This was not a good idea, from what I've heard. Reports say that there was some people in the back that was very hesitant, very reluctant to let this go. And I'm sorry, Daniel Bryan, especially from your reaction on Monday, that this idea was at your expense. So, Ryan, I'm sure you have some things to share about that.
Yeah, well, first off, like you said, last year at WrestleMania, these two got the old screw job when their match was scrapped from the card. So I thought, hey, WWE is giving them this spot, you know, as a makeup kind of, you know, a year later, saying we're sorry. But then they go and do 18 seconds of wrestling, you know. Can't even really call it wrestling. It's just the 18 seconds of a run and a kick. And I guess a kiss and a kick is what I would say. I read a quote here by someone on this Bleacher Report, credit to them. They said, cherish every walking moment in the sun, because one brogue kick later, it can all disappear. And I guess that really sums it up, and kind of sad because, you know, these two are good wrestlers, and, you know, it's WrestleMania. You want to see superstars put on a classic. And even if it was a squash match, I don't know if I would have been okay with that either. So.
Yeah, I think. yeah, I think that both of them really had the potential to put on. I mean, Daniel Bryan speaks for itself. Speaks for himself. He definitely would have put on a clinic. I know that for sure. I've seen, you know, the Ring of Honor hour-long matches with, I mean, you name it, CM Punk, Nigel McGuinness, the list goes on. But to basically just spoil the moment, this was his first moment. This was his first grand stage moment as, you know, as a WWE wrestler. And he was the World Heavyweight Champion. To not give him that opportunity to have his moment. And Sheamus, too. I've actually been very impressed with Sheamus's work over the past year or so. So very surprised that they didn't give them an opportunity to really show, you know, what they've been working for. So I'm hoping that this develops into something. Interestingly enough, we automatically migrate to Alberto Del Rio, which we will talk about later. And I don't know if Daniel Bryan's is going to get the shaft altogether, which I definitely hope not. Extreme Rules is a few weeks away. So hopefully they, you know, do something with that, maybe a triple threat match, which I wouldn't necessarily oppose. So, all right, we go on to the next match, which was the Intercontinental title match, if I'm not mistaken. Or was it Kane and Randy Orton?
I believe it was Kane and Randy.
Yeah, Kane beats Randy Orton. And this was I don't have many mark out moments, just with the current product. But I celebrated. I put my hands in the air, and I was very happy that Kane finally had a big level win. He's had, you know, he's I believe 6-8 at WrestleMania. So he's been in 14 of them, and he's 6-8. But I would venture to say that this is probably his biggest win as far as a high level type of win. Randy Orton, with all of his accolades and his credentials, this was probably his biggest win. I'm very, very happy that Kane went over with Randy Orton. I think it was very, very necessary. Randy Orton, I mean, he doesn't lose anything because he put Kane over at WrestleMania. He's still going to be probably a champ in a year or so, or less, and Kane needed this win. He needed to go over Randy Orton to make his return of any relevance, because basically we get these promos and these videos week after week on Raw. Wonder if he's going to get them wear the mask. Wonder how he's going to come back. He comes back in this welder mask, you know, takes that off and returns to the mask, and he comes back, and, you know, people popped hard for his return just to be fed to John Cena. And if he was going to be fed to Randy Orton, it just wouldn't have been good at all. So I'm very happy that he went over Randy Orton. Hopefully he'll put himself in some type of relevant feud and continue this type of dominance. So, Ronnie, what do you have on that?
Very, very shocking that Kane won. Really would have thought Orton won, but I was happy to see Kane won. He needed that way more than Randy Orton did. The finish, I did like the finish. Haven't seen a choke slam from the top rope in a while, so that was pretty good. And I did like how Orton, the RKOs, and came close to winning, as we thought he would, but still didn't. It was overall, I'd say, like I said, Kane needed it more than Orton, and I'm excited to see where Kane goes from here now. So whether it be staying heel, or, you know, I don't know if he gets any type of world title shot anytime soon, but just excited to see where he goes from here. Any type of title shot, I guess, in this point of his career. So,
yeah,
that's my take.
Yeah, I'm very happy that they made that decision to put him over. like you're saying now, hopefully it propels him to something relevant, and you know, maybe he's never been a relevant WWE champion less than a day so before Austin snatched it back up. So maybe he'll have an opportunity before his career is over to become the WWE champion. So then we go forward to the Intercontinental Championship match. We got the Big Show defeated Cody Rhodes to become the the new and first reigning, first reign for him, Intercontinental Champion, and we definitely want to also give him some congratulations for achieving a feat that only few have before him, and capturing every single active title in the WWE. Former World Heavyweight, WWE, U.S. Intercontinental and Tag Team Champion. And it's interesting that I believe that this is the Big Show's 14th title in the 13 years that he's been there. And to me, this was his WrestleMania moment. I've, you know, talked to a lot of people and seen a lot of things about people saying that show shouldn't go over. You know, this match should be won by Cody Rhodes to propel his career. From day one, I've disagreed with that. I think a win or a loss from Cody Rhodes, this guy is on road to superstardom anyways, and I think that it actually would have helped Cody Rhodes to lose to the Big Show on behalf of the Big Show, because this will gain steam from the Big Show due to the Big Show needing, you know, first of all, needing that WrestleMania moment, Cody Rhodes setting him up with these videos, setting him up to have that moment and making it more precious. And then, you know, the Big Show, he's been around for 13 years. You know, he's done his thing, and if I'm not mistaken, he only left once during that tenure. And there's, you know, a couple of times he had to be sent back down to lose some weight and things like that. But he's given so much to the company in the 13 years that he's been there, just to, you know, not really have a WrestleMania moment. I think it was very good that he won, you know, the Intercontinental title to have that moment as a thank you for what he's done. So what are your thoughts?
Well, first off, this match was done absolutely right. The pace of the match, the amount of time it was, everything. And it's crazy that the World Heavyweight title match wasn't done this way and they put more stock into the Intercontinental Championship. But as you said, yeah, the congratulations to Big Show. And I've always been a Big Show fan since he's been in WWE. So I was happy about that. Liked the finish and everything. It was nice to see him, you know, go hug his family or kiss his wife and see him kind of get a little teary-eyed. That's always good when you see that. And, he got to win the title. And it's amazing that after all this time, this is his first Intercontinental title. That's still pretty crazy to me. So after you said having all those titles and finally getting the Grand Slam hit at WrestleMania 28. And I would agree with you that no matter what, Cody's going to be a superstar as long as they let him be a superstar. So it didn't matter if he won or lost. But I feel it may have been time for Cody to move on from Intercontinental status and maybe try to go up to world status, and because he had had that belt for a while and wasn't doing much with it, so. You could even go from a standpoint to where he was getting bored on the Intercontinental level and wants to challenge the world champion. So
he
set himself up a little good for that.
Yeah, he can definitely cut it, that type of promo. I mean, you know, he could.
Yeah.
You know, he has that smirkiness to him that, you know, he could say, you know, well, you know, it was an off night, or you know, my mind was too focused on, you know, bigger and better things, a world heavyweight title, or, you know, a WWE title. He has, you know, he really has both choices, because both champions right now are baby faces. So, you know, he could feud against Punk, which would be very good, actually, very, very good and fresh. Or he can feud against Sheamus, which would be a relatively fresh kind of feud as well. So, I mean, they, unless the WWE holds the, you know, holds the reins on him, you know, the sky is definitely, you know, up, you know, it's definitely the yeah. limit or the platform, so to speak, for his career. I mean, he's got it. He's definitely got it. And, you know, using this WrestleMania loss to help him, or especially on the mic, like I said before, it definitely it could help him a lot. So congratulations, Russ. Congratulations to Big Show and Cody Rhodes. I highly doubt that his career would be derailed because he lost the title to the Big Show of anybody. So then we go to the five-star, this dynamite tag team match between Kelly Kelly and extras Maria Menounos beating Beth the Phoenix and Eve Torres. Now, here's the thing. You have the celebrity appearance every week. I mean, every year at WrestleMania. And I guess this year was kind of The Rock, and they chose Maria Menounos to go over on the Divas champion and the most pushed current Divas heel. Now, I definitely have to credit this to David Hero from Pro Wrestling Report. Made a really good point this weekend. He said he wonders why the WWE goes all out to bring the outsider in to go over the insider who's been working, you know, hard for, you know, all year, you know, to get to WrestleMania, just for the outsider to have a, you know, a few training sessions and to, you know, to go over. And this definitely, I mean, we've seen that. We've seen that with Mayweather. We've seen that with Aki Bono. It's very, very interesting because if they did decide to do that, I would have rather seen the Bella Twins. They go over the Bella. They both go over the Bella Twins going over Beth Phoenix and Eve was just not a good idea. I mean, for Maria Menounos to pin Beth Phoenix on two occasions, one at Raw and one at WrestleMania, is really it devalues the any type of prestige or preciousness for this Divas title. Now, you're expecting Beth Phoenix to have a very hard-fought feud against a Tamina Snuka or a Natalya or a Karma, which you know, are definitely our prayers go out to, you know, her and her situation with her baby. We definitely hope that you know, you just have some physical, some mental healing with this grieving process. But having a feud with her, and we're expecting, you know, Beth Phoenix and Karma to, you know, put on a big monster, you know, kind of Andre and Hogan style, you know, clash. But for some reason, we're supposed to be okay find it okay to, you know, for Maria Menounos, who, by the way, had some banged up ribs, to pin Beth Phoenix. And I thought it was a terrible decision to do that. She could have been a special guest referee and could have pushed Eve or Beth Phoenix when they try to bully her, and she could have pushed them backwards, and Kelly Kelly could have rolled them up, and she would have pinned them. There's a bunch of different type of scenarios that they could have placed her in, except instead of, you know, being in a match. And so wasn't a big fan of it at all, but her and Kelly Kelly defeats Beth Phoenix and Eve, so I'm sure that you have some some complaining about that as well.
Yeah, this one was just, it was all bad for me from the start. I agree with you. I felt it was a little disrespectful to the other divas, like you said, that work all year. You know, you travel all year, and you want this WrestleMania spotlight, let alone the payday and the glitz and the glamour, and you give it to somebody who's the host of a show, a TV show.
Yeah.
That doesn't, I mean, that just really upsets me a lot. As you said, Maria Menounos could have been the guest referee. She could have even just been in, been a manager, you know, and just somehow helped with the outcome of the match. It was all bad from the standpoint of she's already on Dancing with the Stars, as you said, with the hurt ribs. So what if she takes a real injury on either show? I mean, that messes her up for either, you know, the opposite show. And as you said, the pinning of the Divas Champion, what does that do for the Divas title? That doesn't help at all. So I don't see how an outsider, a host of a television show, should be pinning the Divas Champion twice in 1 year. That's a little a little hard for me to swallow there. So it's I guess no pun intended, it's just a slap in the face to the other, a woman's special slap to the other divas.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
As you know, I was a component of even just having the champion, bringing back the championship scramble and having all the divas in it, minus Santina. That would have been, that would have worked. You could have showcased all the divas, but hey, we got this match with the awkward team of Beth Phoenix and Eve. You don't know what Eve's going to do each week, so you don't know where her head's at, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. We got it. We had it. Sorry for Beth Phoenix.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be one of the the matches that the WWE vows to be in the file of forgettables, just like the WrestleMania 17 match between The Undertaker and Triple H. That's supposed to be a forgettable, I guess. But yeah, that's with fans that are diehards. There are very few matches that are forgettables, and even if they are forgettables, they will be remembered when something's mentioned. So we will go on with the Hell in the Cell match. Special referee Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, with a, I'm going to walk down and reveal to the world how my hair is. I'm going to take off my hood and show everybody that it seems like I had a mohawk when I was going fishing, and then I grew my hair out just to make my head fuller, against Triple H, which has gotten in much, much better shape than his match with CM Punk and Kevin Nash last year. So kudos to Triple H for that. It definitely makes sense for him to have in his mind that they're going to, you know, this is it. This is something that I definitely have to get in shape. If anything, I don't get in shape for, it's definitely not going to be WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So, and they, I tell you what, this this match to me was by far just because of everything involved. There were a couple matches that were candidates, but this was the match of the night, not necessarily because of the wrestling per se, but because of the feeling, the passion, the poignance that this match entailed. It was just from top to bottom a story, And I think that having matches like that within the WWE is long overdue. That tells a story. This epitomizes what the fans from a whole want to see in the match. They want to be captured in the moment, and we had that when it came to Undertaker and Triple H. Of course, the great writing consists of near falls, and we saw our fair share of near falls. I think a lot of us, it's one of them things as well, because for the most part, we knew that he was going to be 20-0, but great writing and great matchmaking consist of having people be suspended in the moment. And I think that we were suspended in the moment a few times when Triple H covered The Undertaker. I know, mentally I was like, okay, this isn't going to happen. But I think it was when the... when Shawn Michaels, Sweet Chin Music, The Undertaker, and then Triple H executed some move and was about to pin him, and Shawn Michaels was near that three count, and that moment, all the other falls were very good, very well put together, but mentally I was like, okay, he's going to kick out. But there was one in particular that that really got me to thinking, like, is this really it? And I think that was the whole point of this match, not make it so predictable, not make it so evident that the Undertaker was going to win, but give us a story. And just at the end when Shawn Michaels looked down as Triple H was down, the Undertaker celebrated, and then they all celebrated at the end. That was the epitome of an end of an era, and I think that you really can't tamper with that. There's a part of me that says I don't ever want to see any three of them again because that was the greatest. That was probably the greatest send-off in WrestleMania history to me. Flair's was good, but there was definitely a very spoiled aftermath to that. But this, to me, was one heck of a send-off, and kudos to just the staff, the matchmaking, just everything about this match was just 5-star. So, very good job. What do you got, Ryan?
Start to finish, I absolutely loved it. I mean, both entrances, I like Triple H's set. Undertaker, as usual, seemed like there's a little more smoke and mist in the air, the flames, everything. It just seems more extreme, WrestleMania. I like the new robe he wore out. That was pretty good.
Super Shredder.
yeah, exactly. It makes you feel like a kid again, because just the music and everything, the gong hitting, and that was great. I did like the build-up for how they lowered the cell, too, when they looked face-to-face and then looked up and then more mist coming out. That was great. As for the match, I had your feeling, too, like, yeah, Undertaker's going to win, but kind of in the back of my mind, I was like, there is a slim chance. You never know. You never know with Triple H. There's a chance he can win, but I would say near fall after near fall, the spot where Michael super kicked Taker and Trip immediately pedigreed him, I thought it was over, and Undertaker kicks out, and wow, that took my breath away. That was the spot of the night for me. The whole entire WrestleMania, that did it for me right there. And for him to kick out of that was amazing. As you said, them beating each other up, and we've seen Undertaker's back at the end of the match, so that tells you he took a little beating and went all out.
Yeah.
And as for the three of them celebrating together, that was just, I mean, almost brings a tear to your eye. That was great. So, and then for the three of them, I don't know how many matches they've had at WrestleMania combined, but I'm sure it's an insane number. And yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well,
it was good to see them get sent off like that. That was now all you got is Triple H. What is, who does he put over, and you know, to get sent off? And it was good to see somebody. Hopefully this is Undertaker retiring, and if it is, it's good to see somebody actually win their last match, you know.
Yeah.
Even though Edge got to last year, but that was an impromptu retirement.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah.
I shared with you on Sunday, and I still go by it, even having some time to think about it. I still go by what I said. I think it's important. I this is 20. I don't think that the Undertaker should come back at all. Even if he wants to,
it's an anniversary number.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a marquee anniversary number. 20-0. I mean, I don't think that anybody would ever reach that. Miz has 17 more to go. I don't think that's going to happen. And that's all we got now, really, as far as someone who has a shot. Edge, I believe, was 7-0 until he lost his first one. But other than that, I don't see anyone doing it. And just to reach that type of achievement to the grandest stage of them all, that's like saying that every time the Cleveland Browns go to the Super Bowl, they win. You know what I mean? That's a big deal. Every time the Rangers go to the Stanley Cup, they win. You know, and it's a big deal.
It's Michael Jordan being 6-0 in NBA Finals. I mean,
oh yeah, definitely,
it's
definitely,
perfection.
Definitely.
You know, you close the deal. That's how I see it. You're close.
Yep. That's exactly right. And so we'll see if he stays. I think that's 21-0 would just be an odd number to leave. Another big reason why I want him to go is because, to me, I just think that he has to be around until 25-0. He has to leave on that type of milestone number. And 20 is it, but 21 is not. And so, I mean, with all the rumors that we're thinking now, that we're seeing now, and what we saw on Monday, who knows who he's going to fight? You know, it was allegedly Lesnar, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. So I don't see him fighting anyone worth not sparing the one win and 21-0. I mean, you know, if anything, you know, he could have chose one of these 4 years that he fought Shawn Michaels and Triple H to, in his words, make someone famous. Make a Dolph Ziggler famous, or make a Wade Barrett famous.
You don't want to bring up that line.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize. That's a taboo. That's a taboo line, according to the WWE people. Well, Vince McMahon in particular. I think that he could have, you know, worked with Drew, or worked with Dolph, or worked with, I don't even know. You know, maybe maybe someone like a Swagger, you know, Jack Swagger, if he was built up right, you know, I know for a fact that he would have put on a heck of a wrestling match against Taker at Mania. You know, 2010 was his year. Well, his season, really. It wasn't really his year. He was relevant for about 3 or 4 months. But you know, they could have led that, you know, to a Taker match, even at a Survivor Series, to see, you know, if something like that would have worked, you know, going against Jack Swagger at a WrestleMania, just to see if it'll work. Okay, well, Swagger's doing a good job. This is a good match. Maybe we can utilize this as a rematch or do something again, you know, build someone else at WrestleMania. So they could have done it. But, you know, they chose Shawn Michaels and Triple H. You know, they're ace in the pockets. And, you know, all four matches were stellar to me. I would say this, though. I would say that contrary to Michaels and Taker, and not including 17, I think that Taker and Triple H 2 was better than Taker and Triple H 1. Like I said, not counting 17, and I think that Michaels and Taker 1 was better than Michaels and Taker 2. So,
I would agree with both.
So Triple H has that. If anything, you know, I saw at the Hall of Fame during their induction of Mike Tyson, which. Real quickly, I think that the Hall of Fame, I saw the Hall of Fame, it was good, and happy to see Rikishi back. Well, the little snippet that they played of him. And kudos to Edge, man. I was very reluctant in the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. just kind of felt like they shoved him in there, but just seeing video... It's amazing what video packages can do.
You could
vouch for that as a newly inducted Cena fan. But it's amazing what video packages can do.
How much Edge has done.
So absolutely,
that video package showed how much he's done.
So. Yeah, it's. I mean, 1997, I believe, is when his first year was, and seeing the entrances back on WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy that he used to have. I mean, just the dark running in the alleys, you know, dark Titantron, you know, and the camera trying to go back and forth, trying to figure out where he is, and they, oh, there he is, coming, you know, coming from the crowd, sliding in, humping the ring, you know, and it's we go from that to just, you know, a multi-time world champ, I believe 11 times he won the world title, and just the go-to guy a lot of the times.
And real quick, just say this: I think we kind of weren't ready to see Edge retire. We just didn't really believe it, you know. So maybe that's what kind of was like, hey, no, let's not put him in the Hall of Fame yet.
Right.
But, I mean, it's 13-year career, you know. His neck is really bad. I believe he's actually done. I don't think it's as bad as Shawn Michaels, or it's like Shawn Michaels, how he took the, you know, 5 years off and came back. I think with this being a neck injury, it's, I don't know if he can. But we just weren't ready to see Edge retire. I think that's why we were so reluctant to him being put in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's exactly why. On my end as well, like, are you sure? You know, like,
Can we wait a couple years?
There was a lot of talk that he wanted to end his career working a program with Christian culminating to a WrestleMania match as well. So, you know, I still wonder, you know, is he still going to have that itch that, you know, it can't be, you know, there's no remedy to it except for a match with Christian at a WrestleMania. You know, that's one of those things that a lot of wrestlers say, man, I just want that moment, you know, and I think mm-hmm. him and Christian would do that. You can just tell that both of them were just very, very emotional, and it was really like they felt it. They both, and I think just Christian on Edge's behalf, like, wow, this is my best friend, you know, like Edge said, for 28 years. This is my best friend, you know, and he made it. You know what I mean? Just to see that from start to finish. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
there
be
was
with
no Edge, there was no Christian.
Yeah. I mean, I would actually say, you know, I would actually say, you know, for both of them throughout their career, of course, Christian on a lesser scale, you know, he has two world titles underneath his belt, but Christian on a lesser scale, but still, though, I mean, what propelled or what catapulted Edge's career was his tag team with Christian. I mean, you know, you had a couple of feuds when he was Edge. I believe he feuded with Jeff Jarrett for a little bit, you know, for the Intercontinental title. And if I'm not mistaken, he won it at a house show and lost it or something like that. I'm sure there's research for that, but this is his career as a babyface when he first came in, and for him to team up with Christian, I mean, you know, they were the tag team. They were one of, well, really the tag team. I mean, of course, you throw in the Hardys and the Dudleys, but, you know, they were the tag team of the Attitude Era. And, you know, and it's interesting that they made that decision for, you know, Edge to turn heel, and they saw something in him that a lot of people didn't see. But, you know, in hindsight, I mean, he is well deserved. You know, the passion he always gave, you know, us that passion. You know, he always made us, you know, feel that moment, even as a crazy heel. I mean, he was one of the most villainous heels that they had in recent history. So
I can, real quick, I can say that I believe Edge got stale to me for maybe like a month or two. So just one time in his entire career, and it was the whole Vicky Guerrero thing, but that went too long anyway.
Yeah. I guess that everybody has, you know, a blemish in their career. We can attribute the corporate ministry era to The Undertaker as well, and the tag team with The Big Show. That was something else. That was awful, is what that was. I've been a Undertaker fan ever since he turned babyface on Jake Roberts around 92, if I'm not mistaken, and I've for 20 years through and through Undertaker fan, but that was one of the only times that I just had a ugh moment when Taker would come out, because I was just so like, oh, this is just terrible, this is awful. But other than that, you know, everybody has their blemish. You said what?
Yeah, around that corporate ministry time, his theme was kind of, it was too fast.
Undertakers.
Yeah,
the theme was awful as well. So, yeah. So kudos to Edge, and you know, just finishing off on the Hell in a Cell match. You know, hopefully Undertaker stays put. You know, have some fun with Michelle McCool, and you know, maybe make some babies, and you know, go fishing and go skiing and just, you know, I'm sure that if Taker announces his retirement, you know, today or tomorrow, he'll be in the Hall of Fame headlining it next year. So, you know, I think that if he doesn't end off this year, he has to go 25 to me, just to leave on that note, and he'll be, I believe, approaching 51 at that point of time, near WrestleMania 25, and, you know, Sting's around, and he still got it to me, but I don't know. Taker's banged up, and he's banged up. He's, you know, not really the best physical condition, as you saw on WrestleMania. So either now or 25. My wish is now. So anything else on the Hell in a Cell match?
No, that's it for me.
Yeah. So we'll go with the next match, Team Laurinaitis versus Team Long, or Team Johnny versus Team Teddy. Team Johnny consists of David Otunga, Drew McIntyre, Mark Henry, The Miz, Jack Swagger, and Dolph Ziggler. John Laurinaitis, Vicky Guerrero was the flag bearer, and Brie Bella was the announcer of that team. And they defeated Team Teddy, which was the consisted of Santino Marella, which was the captain, Zack Ryder, R-Truth, the Great Khali, Kofi Kingston, and Booker T. Tae Long and Oksana came out together. Hornswoggle was the flag bearer, and Nikki Bella was the announcer. I was expecting Team Johnny to go over. I shared in my articles. You know, I think that it was the. I don't want any of them to be featured on both shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a bad call. But seeing Raw with this power, with this people power, I guess that they saw something with, you know, a heel controlling both shows. I'm not going to say much about that. I think it was the better call out of the two, and the match was very lackluster. People weren't interested, and that's about it. So, what do you have to share on that?
I would agree with you. Either team winning, one person running Raw and SmackDown just wasn't really. I wasn't feeling that. I would have rather it been a draw. anything, you know. So, but from a standpoint, Team Laurinaitis actually had the win. I mean, they had the better team when you look at it with the superstars they had. Having, I don't know, what was it, like three former world champions on their team. You kind of had to win them over, so.
Yeah,
that was okay, but we'll see. This must be the it's going to be the old Johnny Laurinaitis' summer, so we'll see how it goes. And yeah, the era of Laurinaitis. But I would say it was Laurinaitis' Rick Pitino white suit that got them the victory. So that'll work for me. Yeah, I was glad to see Miz get the pin. I would have taken Ziggler getting the pin, but. I guess for Miz, he kind of had to, you don't want the biggest, well, kind of too late. You kind of do have almost the biggest drop-off in WrestleMania history, so.
Alberto!
yeah, not even being on the card, Del Rio would be. But I did like the one thing out of this match. I would have liked to seen, like, the old everybody doing their finishers on each other one after another. But, you know, how they usually do that in the big tag matches, but I did like the triple flip to the outside of the ring. I can't remember who. I think it was Ryder, Truth, and
Kofi.
Kofi.
I think it was.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was a good spot. So at least they gave us a little something. So that was pretty cool. But I guess if anybody had to win, it's better than Laurinaitis over Long, because you know you can't really. Not too many things you can, storylines you can write up if Teddy Long was running both shows.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
My take.
So, yeah. I agree. just storylines. I like Teddy. But,
Hall of Famer to me.
I definitely would agree with that too. Definitely a Hall of Famer. But yeah, I don't see any type of intrigue going on with Teddy Long. I had being the general manager of Raw, so we can go a little crunch for time here. We can go forward to the match, the WWE title match with CM Punk and Chris Jericho. We have a little bit of time left, and a lot more to cover. So we will. I thought that this was number two as far as the match of the night. Started off slow. I was definitely unimpressed by the first five or so minutes of the match. I've seen different types of reviews of some people thinking his shouts about his family was a good thing and some bad. I wasn't a fan of it just because of what happened on Raw. It could have been carried over to Extreme Rules. And you know, Jericho, the switch and the back and forth with finishing maneuvers was good. I think the Jericho tap was okay because they went back and forth with their submissions, and after Jericho was trying his best to try to get out of it, Punk raised his head up so he couldn't knee him, and then really had no choice but to tap. So I think that was well written. I think that was well put together. And, you know, I wanted Jericho to win, but I think, I have no odds against CM Punk. So I wasn't anti-Punk. I'm just pro Jericho. So that's my take on it. It wasn't too bad for me. I was expecting Jericho to lose, so that helped me a lot. So, a good match. Yeah. What do you have, Ryan, on that?
I think that I would agree. You said after the way the storyline went, it took that turn with the whole Jericho talking about Punk's family. I pretty much seen that Punk was going to win this match, but I will say the last 5 to 7 minutes, it kind of changed my mind, and I wasn't sure, like, hey, can Jericho pull this off? So I would say definitely a great finish, and they they did not disappoint at all. So, yeah, they are both the best in the world.
I would say that as well. Jericho tweeted that he gave CM Punk some props and tweeted that he was the better man that day. So the sandwich between that match and the main event, I thought it was going to be a Brodus Clay squash match, but it wasn't. I was half right. I was wrong about the squash match, but I was right about the Brodus Clay. He comes out and calls his mom, and then a bunch of mamas come out and does some type of choreographed dance, and I thought it was really cheesy, but, you know, in hindsight and being rational, I think probably they needed to lighten, to make that moment a little fluffier, to set us up for Rock and Cena. And if anything, I guess that was probably the better thing to do, I guess. Once again, we've got a caller on hold here. The number is 347-884-8452. Thank you for joining in with us, Pancakes and Power Slams talk show. And we've been recapping WrestleMania here. We were going a little overtime on it. what do you have on the final match, which was The Rock defeating John Cena? I'll let you start off with that one.
I know last night the crowd chanted Rock, you still got it, but as an avid Rock fan, I will say I did see him miss a couple spots, so I don't know how much you can say he still has it. Yeah, he's still in shape, I'll take that. It was an okay match, pretty, I would say good, because between the two of them, they have about a dozen moves that they do. So I would have much rather liked Cena to win, as he will still be here. And we've talked about how him winning could help put somebody over in his next feud. So I don't know. Yeah. I would have took Cena, but I guess when you're The Rock, you can kind of get whatever you want in WWE. And, yeah, it's kind of hard to have Rock lose in Miami. So but kudos to The Rock for beating Austin, Hogan, and Cena at a WrestleMania. That's something we'll never see again. So
that's a big deal for sure. So I think if anybody would come close, it would probably be Taker, who's beat Flair, Michaels, and Tripp. So So of course that leads to Rock and Taker. Dun dun dun. But yeah, I agree. I am very the people who know me know that I'm very anti-Cena. So, but you know, I was coming around. You know, 10 years him being in the WWE and me not liking him since day one, because his first real big feud was with Chris Jericho back in Vengeance, I believe July of 2002. And yeah, so he already had a disadvantage for me. But with everything that he's done and everything, one of them video package moments again, watching the packages and seeing all that and seeing what he's really done and just the build of this feud over the year, just made me realize how much he's really put into the business. I'm definitely up to give it to him. I'll tell you what, the earth would have split for a moment on Sunday if John Cena would have won, because the three fingers on each hand would have went up, and it would have I would have been a first ever Cena advocate. I'll go there. I don't know too much about a fan, but I would have been a Cena advocate for the first time. So I would have wished he went over, but I guess it all lined up to what we saw on Monday, which we will go in quickly before we take our calls. Once again, the number is 347-884-8452. Thank you, those who are holding. Once again, follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling, and on Facebook, the Facebook page is Crave Wrestling for all news and good trivia questions that we'll put up on the Facebook page, and good vintage videos. It's going to be a very fun page. Really, as far as Raw is concerned, we really don't have much time for the recap. But I tell you what, I will highlight a few spots. We'll highlight the returns and the debuts. Well, I guess it was a return, really. Still, we got the return of Alberto Del Rio. I'll save the other return for later. And we got the return / debut of Laura Tensei. We furthered Chris Jericho and CM Punk's feud, and we also saw Abraham Washington possibly being with Mark Henry, which is not okay in my eyes. but it was good to see Del Rio back. Interesting that they're throwing him in against Sheamus. Really doesn't give Daniel Bryan any time. He just looked at Josh Matthews, which is a little weird. So what's and then we saw Tensei. Interestingly enough, I was very, very surprised that they actually brought him up as being a former WWE wrestler. Yeah. I was very surprised about that. And I said, whoa, okay, well, I guess they're not as taboo as I thought. But I thought that return was an absolute flop. I was not a fan of it at all. They chose Alex Riley, someone who could be a star, but they just
extremely wrong to choose.
Yeah, yeah, they're just. I mean, I would have
behind Riley.
Yeah, I would have chose, honestly, you know, not to typecast or anything, but it would have made sense if they would have chose Yoshitatsu.
Exactly.
Because they're building all this about him being in Japan. Why don't he beat a Japanese wrestler? I mean, it just would have made sense. I mean, they would have had similar styles. Tatsu has that New Japan type of style to him, and I mean, just the markings on the face and just the real stiff and slow wrestling. I have seen a lot of videos with Tensei or Matt Bloom or A-Train or Giant Bernard or whoever you want to call him. I've seen a lot of videos with him in Japan. He had a really good match against Angle, his tag team partner. At one time was Tyson Tomko. They had a tag team run. His most recent partner in Japan, Carl Anderson, to me, I really wish that he would have a big break in the States, because I really like his work. But he was the man. He was really good in Japan from all the videos and all the footage that I've seen. And he had to be toned down. He had to be asked to be toned down with this, because it just wasn't what I've seen. And it was just rather awful to me. It was just really bad. So, and then the last was Brock Lesnar. I was a huge fan of this, and I think John Cena is definitely the best person for him to return on, and I'm looking forward very much to see where they're going to go with this. So what are your thoughts on those highlights?
From the three returns, I felt Alberto Del Rio, the expectations are too high for to just throw him back into the world title mix. As you said, what happens with Daniel Bryan, they need to kind of take care of that, you know, with Sheamus and Daniel Bryan. I think they should still have a match at Backlash or something. But the crowd was excited to hear Del Rio's music, but I believe they were more excited to see Ricardo Rodriguez.
Mm.
And that right there shows you that – maybe you need to lower your expectations on Alberto Del Rio. I like him, but not enough to just, hey, I'm back and I'm in the world title hunt.
Yeah.
That doesn't fly with me. The Lord Tensei debut, as I said, Alex Riley was the wrong person to debut. The crowd was more behind Riley.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't put Riley on TV and you put him on there for this. That's insane to me, but I just need to see more of Lord Tensei before I have any feelings on, you know, any thoughts on him. And the third debut, Brock Lesnar, was absolutely, like you said, that was a good spot. I mean, I was, as you say, marking out when I seen Lesnar. I'm excited to see where this goes, because when Lesnar left, I think, Lesnar's WrestleMania 20 was when John Cena, if I'm not mistaken, won his first title, the U.S. title.
U.S. title versus JBL,
so,
yeah. Or a big
so
show.
you can make a good storyline out of this, like, hey, you've been gone and I've been running the show, and Brock Lesnar came in and was a superstar within, 4 months? Yeah, 4 or 5 months, so. They can make a good storyline out of that, so you're right. I will agree with the Lesnar Cena. This should be fun. Hopefully they don't mess it up.
Yeah. We're going to take one of our callers. The question is, do they build this for another year? Because a lot of talks was they're going to do the idea of having another year build for this. And so does he do part-time again and they do another year build for Cena, or does this lead to – I'm sure it won't be on a minor pay-per-view. If anything, it'll probably be on a SummerSlam or Survivor Series. So, caller, I'm going to put you in here, say your name and where you're from and your thoughts. Hello? Hello? Are you on? Caller? 614 area code.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, this is Sean from Columbus.
Hey, Sean, how you doing, man?
All right.
Good, good. What are your thoughts, Sean?
My thoughts is I don't think they can hold up for another year like they did the scene on Rock. I think they showed a weakness when they did that with so many filler feuds in between that year for Cena. A lot of people kind of overlooked his feuds, you know, with Kane, the little one with Del Rio and stuff like that. I think they learned a lesson that they can't do another year. They have to hit it when it's hot. I think if they could do it over again, they wouldn't have announced the Rock Cena a year ahead. They would have did it maybe at the Royal Rumble or something. So with this Brock Lesnar Cena feud, I think you're probably going to see a match much quicker than you did with Rock and Cena.
Hmm. Where at, do you think?
How soon? Based off last night, I would say at least SummerSlam at the latest.
Okay.
Maybe even sooner.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the pay-per-view?
Man, I hate to say it, but overall, I really didn't like the pay-per-view. Take away the Taker match, I think that was the best match on the card. I was very disappointed with what they did with Daniel Bryan for a guy who's held the belt as long as he did and not being on the show last year. Get beaten 18 seconds with a title match as the opener. That really started the show really bad to me. Rock Cena, I mean, you and me talked about it on Twitter while I was saying I really had no problem with The Rock winning because, you know, Cena, he's had this 10-year run. I didn't think he needed the rub as much as you could say Rock did when he faced Hogan. The match overall, it was decent. It wasn't that bad. I had no complaints about that. It was what you expected. I did expect more from Punk and Jericho, though. But maybe that was because of high expectations from everybody else. But that was one of those matches you felt that if any match was still the show, it would have been that one.
Yeah. Cool. All right, Sean. Well, thank you so much for your time. And be sure to spread the word and stay connected. We'll hopefully hear from you again.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right. Well, we have enough time for our flavor of the week subject. Apologize to any other callers or tweeters. Of course, this is WrestleMania, WrestleMania weekend, and Brock Lesnar coming back. So there's a lot of information that we didn't cover, but be sure to spread the word. This will be every Tuesday at 9 a.m. The number is 347-884-8452. This is a Pancakes and Power Slams morning wrestling talk show with Chris Featherstone and Ryan Fuqua. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling, on Facebook, the page is Crave Wrestling, and for news and trivia and videos, and we'll be sure to do our best to, you know, stay with the time and with the schedule to get as many callers as we can. So we will spend this last 15 minutes or so with a weekly segment that we're going to do called the Flavor of the Week, and in honor of the Pancakes Morning theme, we chose Flavor of the Week. The Flavor of the Week is going to consist of just any random topic, and be sure to tweet your topics at Crave Wrestling or email your topics at cravewrestling@gmail.com, and maybe we will spend some time in talking about your random topic. I mean, it can be anything regarding wrestling. It could be, best U.S. champion. It could be, you know, worst manager, any random topic that you can think of, just send it to us, and you know, maybe we'll spend some time and talking to it. This week, we're going to spend about 10 to 15 minutes talking about the dreaded WrestleMania 16, WrestleMania 2000. In honor of WrestleMania, we will excruciate ourselves by talking about this awful pay-per-view. So, Ryan, I'll let you lead off on this flavor of the week topic.
Yeah, WrestleMania 16, which was the year 2000, you know, better known as WrestleMania 2000. Now, we know there's been some average or below average WrestleManias, but this to me sticks out as one of the worst because from a standpoint of they went with the idea of no singles matches, no one-on-one matches.
Let me interject. I'm interject on that. I'm going to say before you go for it, I'm going to tell everybody the winners and losers of that match. The Big Boss Man and Bull Buchanan defeated The Godfather and D'Lo Brown. Hard in the tag team match, Hardcore Holly beat Crash Holly in the Hardcore Battle Royal. TNA beat Head Cheese, Al Snow, and Steve Blackman in the tag team match. Edge and Christian defeated the Dudleys and the Hardys in a, they called it a triangle ladder match at that point in time. It wasn't a TLC. Terry Reynolds with Moolah beat the Cat with Mae Young in a cat fight with Val Venus as a special referee. Too Cool and China defeated the Radicals, Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn, and Dean Malenko in a six-person intergender match, which was only one woman. Benoit and Jericho both had a fall on Kurt Angle. Jericho initially for the European title, and then Benoit for the Intercontinental title in the triple threat match, two falls. Rikishi and Kane in the ladder match, by the way. Rikishi and Kane. I don't know. Was that a ladder match? It might have not been. No, it wasn't a ladder match. Rikishi and Kane defeated DX, X-Pac and Road Dogg versus DX, in a tag match. And then Triple H defeated The Rock, The Big Show, and Mick Foley in a Fatal 4-Way. Triple H had Stephanie McMahon, The Rock had Vince, Foley had Linda, and Cho had Shane. So the platform that we're working with for this critique that Ryan is about to give us. So, what do you have?
Yeah, like I said, just going with the standpoint of WrestleMania, no singles matches, only with the exception of the Divas match, and I'll get on that. But WrestleMania, you know, maybe this is something you do at a minor pay-per-view, not a WrestleMania. So it's kind of, I guess it was a prequel to how they do the gimmick pay-per-views now.
Yeah.
Who would have knew, thought that was coming. But I have just little quick hits here for each match that I thought of. First, I'll just go down the card. Like I said, the Big Boss Man and Bull Buchanan beating Godfather and D'Lo. You know, we remember this is the first match. Everybody's all excited. The big entrance with Ice-T. Pimpin' ain't easy, man.
Oh, man.
You know, there was your concert at WrestleMania like they do every year.
Yeah.
And then here's the thing. They had the big entrance just to lose. I didn't understand that. Like, D'Lo and Godfather, and as we said before, D'Lo, I don't know if he cared for his spot too well.
He wasn't mentioned not one time.
Yeah, if you go back and look, he doesn't look too comfortable either.
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. And then the Hardcore Battle Royal was next. That was pretty good. That's another WrestleMania match that shows off multiple superstars involved. I want to say that it was one of the things that got the Hardcore 24/7 going, or was it already going before then? I'm not too sure.
I think that's it was a hardcore battle royal. If I'm not mistaken, I think Taz was in it too. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, Steve Blackman was the one who started the 24/7, and I don't think he had it before then. I think he had it afterwards, if I'm not mistaken. Well, no, Crash Holly is the one that started the 24/7.
Yeah,
I think Blackman
.
Ended it, if I'm not mistaken.
So it was definitely somewhere around there.
It was around there, yeah.
And so that was good, you know, and that was back when they used to do chair shots to the head, so that's pretty good. Moving along, you got TNA and Al Snow. TNA beat Al Snow and Steve Blackman. I'll just give you one line from this. The only Hall of Famer in that match would be Trish Stratus. That says it all right there. Trish Stratus is the only one that will ever be in the Hall of Fame from
not
that
Tensei?
Match.
I mean,
Tensei's got some work to do if he wants to, he better start winning the crowd over doing something, so.
Yeah.
And then the ladder match, the triangle ladder match, I mean, this was, of course, these were all awesome. I believe the one started at the SummerSlam prior to that, and then it was this one, the triangle ladder match, and then I want to say the next one was the TLC, because it was a string of them where they went SummerSlam, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, like that. So that was just, I mean, that was innovation, brought up something brand new, and who knows, if this never happened, we may have never had the Money in the Bank ladder match, because I want to say that this is influenced by that, so that's pretty
good
cool. And then moving along, Terry Runnels beating the Cat with Val Venus was the special guest referee, and the Fabulous Moolah was in Terry's corner, I believe, and Mae Young was in the Cat's corner. And at the time, I don't know where the other divas were that were actually wrestlers, but if you think about it, Terry and the Cat are not, they were never wrestlers, they were just managers, so I don't know. Once again, the Divas always get screwed at Mania. I don't understand that. So. And then Bow spot, I mean, I don't, being a special ref for a Divas match, I don't know how he would have felt, how he felt about that, but yeah. Too Cool in China beating the Radicals. If you remember, the Radicals came in, and they were the super heels, I mean, just beating everybody up. They took out Cactus Jack at the time, Mick Foley.
Yeah.
You know, he hired him or, you know, got him over, and then Triple H says, you know, get him. So how does my feelings with that, if they were supposed to be these super heels, how does Too Cool in China defeat them? Like, that just took away all their steam, and the next month, I believe, Eddie Guerrero starts this love crush on China, and,
Yeah. So they came in,
Eddie Guerrero, but, he's the Hall of Famer, but he went on to solidify his career even more from the WWE.
They came in, feuded with DX, right?
Yes, and then Triple H bought him out or gave him a contract because remember so that loss didn't help Saturn or Malenko any, so sorry for that luck.
As you can
see, all know,
as we all
Guerrero we all know, rest in peace, but he went on to be the man. Now this the Intercontinental, the Eurocontinental, I'm sorry to say, title match, I thought this was awesome. This was one of the two good matches on the card, the other being the ladder match. I'm not sure why they don't they don't really have the titles to do it anymore. That's why I feel they need that third title that can rotate shows, maybe European, maybe Cruiserweight. But this was awesome to have three people in the match, two best out of three falls, and each one is for a title. I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. doesn't get any better than that. And these three guys, Jericho, Benoit, and Angle, I mean, just wrestling classic. There's not much more I can say other than Angle crying after the loss, and he was never pinned in this match, which is still, I'm sure he can have something to say about that to this day. Kane and Rikishi beating X-Pac and Road Dogg. I have no idea how this match came about. I cannot remember for the life of me. I apologize. But Kane and Rikishi, that's just a weird tag team. I mean, I like both the guys. Don't get me wrong. They're yeah, Hall of Famers to me.
If I'm not mistaken, we got about 4 minutes left. If I'm not mistaken, Torrey was with Kane, and then Torrey turns on Kane, aligns herself with X-Pac, and then DX was beating up on Kane, and Rikishi just came to save the day and just be a part of the spot, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, and it was the weak link of DX. So,
yeah.
And then real quick, the Fatal 4-Way had so much potential, a McMahon in every corner, but you had a heel win for the first time in the main event at Mania. And that didn't sit well with me after the entire night was a joke. I was real huge on Rock then, and he had went like a year without having the title. It only made sense, but it wasn't an awful match. It was just the ending. So, and real quick, Big Show, first person eliminated, but he finally won a singles match in a Mania, so no more bad manias for Big Show.
Yeah. I guess it came full circle because that was his first mania, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So
Second. First was with Holy the year prior.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. 1999. Yeah. That's true. Yep. Cool. Well, I just really, really briefly, what I have to share on that is I think you did a really good job with the analysis to add on to that. I definitely will attribute, if anything, like you mentioned, if anything, the good out of this WrestleMania, I would attribute that the ladder match, triangle ladder match, to propel the TLC matches, the Money in the Bank, and both pay-per-views now. They're both single standalone pay-per-views. So I guess that match alone has a lot to do with that, and as well, the careers of Edge and Christian, you can also put that in there as well. So we are wrapping up on time. We appreciate everybody who has been listening, and all the callers, and the one who got to be on air. Be sure to check us out on Twitter at Crave Wrestling, and on Facebook, the page is www.facebook.com/Crave Wrestling for new latest news, interviews, chat, trivia, some good trivia for the old school heads. See what you can come up with getting these trivia answers. I have trivia questions for days, so we'll see what that happens. Every week we will recap Raw, we will recap SmackDown, we will recap TNA, and we will recap Ring of Honor. All of the shows that we are on that is on TV right now. So be sure to spread the word. Thank you so much for airing for listening and being with us and sharing your time, being a part of us. Next week's Flavor of the Week topic would be the worst World Heavyweight Champion since its inception in 2002, I believe, when it came back, September of 2002. So be sure to get your thinking caps on. Call in for the Flavor of the Week and for your thoughts next week, 9 a.m., The number once again is 347-884-8452. Thank you so much for sharing with us, and we hope you have a wonderful day.